Brother Bill with us now. Father Bill Cieslak has been a Capuchin for 47 years, a priest for 38 years. He spent the first 25 years of ministry teaching liturgy and sacraments at Franciscan School of Theology in Berkeley and the Graduate Theological Union. For the past 6 years, he served as Provincial Director of Development for the Capuchin Province of St. Joseph, and in July 2011 became Director of the Office of Preaching and Evangelization. Father Bill preaches and teaches every month, except during the summer, at Franciscan Renewal Center in Scottsdale, Arizona. Brother Bill, welcome to Relevant Radio's Morning Air this morning.
Well, thank you very much.
Hey, very happy to have you along, and with that long, great background and focusing currently on evangelization and parish mission renewal as we head into a new school year and things kind of get rejuvenated and re-energized at your local parish. It's a great time to look into that. And, I think as anyone who's listened to Relevant Radio over the last few months knows, the church is fired up about the political situation this year as well. And so hopefully we're heading into fall with a full head of steam, and a lot of folks may be more fired up about the faith than usual. Wouldn't you say this is a great time of year to take advantage of those feelings?
I think whenever things happen, it's a great time to capture them.
Absolutely. A lot of things going on in that regard. Well, through the years, what have you used as some kind of tools to spark things in terms of evangelization, maybe when things get back to a normal schedule for people? And I mean, the Lord is the Lord 365 days a year. But just thinking about it as, regular routines return to the household and kids are back together in school, maybe different educational programs get underway at the parish, and it's time to rev things up. What have you used, historically during this time of year to get people excited again?
Well, I think what's important is this school year is often a time for new beginnings because people are seeing things differently and separately, and so that's a good thing, a good thing to capture. Also, family values, I think, is it's a good time to sort of rehearse that, because what we want to do in formation and family formation is to continue working on the values to form the young people into really high quality Catholics.
And is that a constant battle over the years, or do you think that battle changes a little bit as technology improves and gives us new opportunities as well as challenges?
Well, it certainly changes its face a little bit, but the deep core down values are really still there. A couple of the values that would be really important for me would be to really get into our skin that God is love and that God really does love us, even when we mess up. God really does love us. I think that's a tremendous value for me. And another value is that. Is that God is so generous to us that we in turn need to really adapt attitudes of both gratitude and generosity. Gratitude and generosity would go a long, long, long way in each of our family situations.
Do you think that I love both of those concepts and those realities more than just concepts, but the first one you mentioned, that God really does love us, and maybe so hard. People may grow up in the church, but then society doesn't share that message with us too often. It might in terms of, it's nature and it's God's beautiful creation. We must take care of it. But, is that what keeps people, once they fall down, they make a mistake, they make several mistakes, they fall into a rut, it keeps them from coming back? They just don't feel that God loves them when they mess up?
Well, I'm not sure if that's the only one, because people can also just get so distracted, that they fail to remember what track they're really on. So I think it's probably a number of things. But even within our Catholic Church, I'm finding a lot of people in the pews just think that God is more vengeful and reactive than really loving, and I just find that horrible, because it doesn't put things in a wonderful perspective. St. John's Gospel is full of the message of God is love, and for some reason we don't hear that message as loud as some other messages.
I tend to agree with you there. What do you think is the cause for that?
Well, I think part of our Catholic upbringing, I think, has been the cause of it. a strategy of trying to impart fear in people. That was certainly true in my own upbringing. You know, I got to watch out because if you do this, this is going to happen. That kind of language, I don't think has really helped a whole lot.
Now, do you think it depends on the person? For me, I guess I'm always more motivated by love. And in terms of managing people through the years, you try to like to have that relationship that's so good that the employee might be embarrassed not to do their best job as opposed to worrying every day they show up they're going to get fired if they don't do their best.
Absolutely. Wouldn't that be great if everybody did that? But I can't tell you how many Catholics when I'm giving these talks, I just sort of, they say, oh, yeah. And then you say, well, but how do you really act? How do you really react in life? What kind of God, image of God do you have that is causing you to react in a certain way? And I think if we ask that question, you know, how do I react when I think about God? What's the basic image that I have? And if the basic image that I have is a just judge, for example, that's really different from a God who really loves. It's the foundation block for everything else.
Well, I'm with you on this one in terms of that love, and I think if we understand that, you know, God's main intent toward us is that love, and if we can come from that point of view, it's so much easier, I think, to do good works when we're motivated through your second point there about generosity. You know, when we understand what we've been given through God's love, that kind of frees us up mentally and emotionally to be able to not be so maybe worried about ourselves. But if we're okay, if our relationship with God is right through absorbing and understanding His love, that's going to free our minds up a little bit to worry about others a little more and get busy loving them.
Absolutely, you know. And right now in our economic situation, it is really important for Catholics to be generous. And you know, to recognize that because God has given us so very much, everything that we have, it's really important for us in turn to be generous. And you know, we have a Capuchin soup kitchen over in Detroit, and we have another meal program in Milwaukee. There are so many poor and needy people in the world, and we're just not really taking care of them. Even our, you know, our own political system doesn't seem to ask the question, what's going to be the condition of the poor? And I think, you know, with whatever, however a person wants to vote, I think to ask that question for themselves, will this policy, what's it going to do to the poor? Is it going to make more people poor? Is it going to make the poor poorer? The gospel says, Jesus says, hey, you gotta make room for the poor. Really, really important.
Is that something that you feel is maybe getting lost, especially during a political season where occasionally that may be a subject of political debate, but it's generally full speed ahead and the slowest get left behind in a political year?
Yeah, I haven't heard either party really talk much about. So what is our position going to do to the poor? And if Catholics don't speak out for the poor, who's going to speak out for the poor?
You know, we're coming out of very slowly for most people, coming very slowly out of the worst economic situation since the 1930s. Yet back in the 1960s, we had the war on poverty, you know, and at some point it took some great photography of very poor portions of the country to publicize the real plight that was unseen by many. And some 40 years on, do you think we've kind of lost our care for the poor a little bit?
Oh, I think we've lost our care for the poor a whole lot, not just a little bit. You know, when you read about the United States, you know, how many people are poorer, you know, how many people are below poverty, we see that number is increasing. It's not decreasing. And then we talk about, well, taking the safety net away from them and somehow they're going to do better or somehow somebody's going to care. Well, the question is, well, who's going to care? This is embarrassing. I think this is really embarrassing for us and disappointing for us as Catholics to see that Jesus, who whose first option was for the poor is not our option.
Hmm. We got talking about love and generosity, and it turns to caring for the poor. We continue our interesting conversation with Brother Bill this morning here as we continue with more of Morning Air in just a minute on Relevant Radio. Talking with Brother Bill, Father Bill Cieslak, this hour, the stated topic to be about evangelization and parish mission renewal, and I imagine we'll get around to that. But, Brother Bill, we got talking about God's love and how that leads us, hopefully, to be loving and generous with others and looking around the political landscape and finding generosity in kind of short supply.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, God's love is the centerpiece for evangelization. I mean, if we start anywhere else, I think we're barking up the wrong tree. So my hope is that that when people listen to us here, they might get sparked a little bit more for attitudes of gratitude and generosity. That's what a great way to lay the foundation for everything else that the Lord's going to tell us.
We talked a little bit a couple minutes ago about love being kind of a good foundation and the best motivator, really. You know, if we feel loved, then we can love in return. And if we know that God, who's ultimately in charge of all, loves us, boy, that's gonna free us up to, you know, not worry about ourselves so much. We can love one another, and liken it to a supervisor-worker relationship at work. You know, a worker can either feel threatened they're going to lose their job if they're not just doing this, that, and the other thing each day, or they can have such a relationship with their supervisor that maybe they'd be embarrassed if they didn't give their best work, you know. And when it comes in terms of evangelization, you know, in terms of looking at it like sales, all right, you can be, okay, you're going to get fired if you don't make this many sales. Or if you are so in love with the product that you're trying to sell and the people you're trying to reach, if you believe that they can't live without it, that's the best way to make that impact, whether it be sales or whether you be spreading the good news of the gospel.
Yeah. You know, I don't know about you, but, you know, fear is a horrible thing to lead our lives. And a lot of people lead their lives afraid, worried. They see life as a glass half empty instead of a glass half full. But when we're always in fear of this and fear of that, you can't do your best work. You can't put your best foot forward. You can't dream. You can't be creative. You know, your life sucks pretty much.
Putting it succinctly there, but it does, you know, in terms of creativity, and radio is supposed to be a fairly creative medium, no matter the format, and you know, the ability to use words and put words together and bring interesting guests on and convey the message of Christ's love and hope for us, that does need to be done in an atmosphere of love and an atmosphere of fear, like you say, that can put a damper on, you know, any direction of life we look at.
Yeah, I was working with a group of people, and I asked them to list all the things that they're afraid of. And they listed all these things on the board, and my gosh, the list was long. And we went down one by the other saying, okay, you're afraid of this, so what's that going to do? Is that going to make the situation better? I'm afraid to get old. Is fear going to make the situation better? I'm afraid my kids are stopping to go to church. Well, is that going to make the situation better? And you get down the whole list, and fear doesn't make any situation better. It just makes people depressed.
And so once they realize that, what becomes the aha moment or the light bulb going on when they realize this fear is just kind of wasted emotion?
Well, to move from a glass half empty to a glass half full is, I think, where the love piece comes in and where the gratitude and generosity pieces come in. That we say, we can't do anything about this, so we hand it over to God and say, God, this is yours. We can't do anything, so inspire me to do something positive to make this whole situation change a little bit. And when we focus then, instead of fear, now we got room in our life to think about God's love and to think about generosity and to think about all the wonderful things that God has done for us and taken care of us. It gives us a rich momentum with which to live every day.
You know, also, can we kind of take heart in the joy in which we can get from him, where he can, you know, we know how the story ends. You know, we've read the book. We know how it ends. So we can move forward without that fear. Yet it seems to be so socially ingrained in us. Yet the freedom when we just, I guess, relax a little bit and realize that he loves us.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it makes every day so much better. One has so many more things to look forward to. How can I use this day that God has blessed me with? You know, one other piece in this is that many Americans think of themselves as we're the one who did everything, and we call upon God whenever we're not doing, when we don't get what we want. It's a really self-centered kind of thing, and that's not a very good way to live life either.
Well, looking at it, as Americans, you know, we grow up bathed in this culture and in our pop culture and the movies where the hero acts on his own and then there's the happy ending. And, you know, so often our dramatic scripts end with a happy ending thanks to some individual action. You know, a large part of the start of the country, a striving for religious freedom, but yet at the same time, a striving to be able to do it ourselves. And, does that kind of build on the, you know, just that background image of personal pride that we maybe grow up with in America?
I think that and the sense of rugged individualism, the sense that I'm okay, and nobody's going to tell me what to do. It's a real disconnect from the human fabric, and it's a forgetfulness that we didn't get here on our own. Our parents brought us into life, and God is the one who gave us the life in the first place. And once we forget those main things, we think that, oh my gosh, I can do whatever I want, and all that's important is, you know, my personal happiness, and if I worked really hard and I'm successful, then it's all me. And we forget that no, it's not all any of us. God has given us the opportunity. God has given us the possibility. God has given us the power. If we do anything good, it's because God is there.
You know, and just that striving, that personal me thing, we can be successful at that, but then once we realize that maybe isn't what we wanted after all, you know, to be able to use that success to ultimately, if we can't share it and enjoy that success with others, it ends up being quite empty.
Yeah. When work comes before everybody else, before relationship, you know, it works for a while, and then all of a sudden it turns up like a dead end.
Another thought that just popped to mind as we're talking about, you know, me, anything from the frontier and taming that, you know, a century ago in the U.S. to the narratives in our various entertainments. But I was just thinking about immigration in terms of me. We did it, you know, we didn't, you know, just swim here all by ourselves and set up shop, you know, and things of, in terms of, you know, taking care of poor or even immigrants, you know, 100 years ago, 120 years ago, our ancestors often were the ones just stepping off the boat.
Yeah, it wasn't even that long for me. All four of my grandparents came from Poland. And I don't think any one of them spoke English when they got here, and I don't think any of them spoke English before they died. And so my parents were the translators. Those were the first English-speaking people, and so they lived a life in English and Polish. And for any of us to forget that the way that we came here was in some way a gift and a struggle, and to say to a next generation, well, we don't understand that, you know, we got this, but we really don't want that for you, is really harsh.
And, you know, we forget the biblical admonition, too, to take care of the foreigner in our land, you know, as the Israelites spent so many hundreds of years as foreigners, essentially, and slaves in Egypt. And because of that, we are reminded constantly to be kind to the foreigner. you know, I think, you know, church I attended as a young teen was at the end of the Vietnam era, and we adopted as a congregation many of the Southeast Asian refugee families, and that seemed like a natural and nice thing to do. They were so appreciative, and, you know, I could certainly imagine were it on the other foot. If I had landed in Vietnam, you know, I would certainly seek out other Americans or the American English language radio station and want to eat hamburgers where I could. And yeah. So, you know, we put the shoe on the other foot. Boy, this half hour has just flown by, but always great to talk about God's love. I think we do not do that enough. So, Brother Bill, Father Bill Cieslak, thank you for your time and your great thoughts this morning.
You're welcome. God bless you.
Thank you very much.